Everybody knew that it could happen. The likelihood was clear. The future was coming. Now it's here. They had to fix the levees, otherwise they'd break. On one side was the city, above it was the lake. It was in the daily papers, in bold letters was the writ. What would happen when the big one hit? But every year they cut the funding just a little more, so they could give it to the army to fight their oil war. National Geographic and the Times-Picayune, they forecast the apocalypse, said it was coming soon. Preparations must be made, they said, now is the time. It was years ago, they shouted, inaction was a crime. They said the dikes must be improved and the wetlands must be saved. But Washington decided instead they should be paved, cause malls were more important than people's lives. So put some gold dust in your eyes and hope no storm arrives. New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. Years and years of warning, no evacuation plan. It was just if the waters rose, get out if you can. There were no buses, no one chartered any trains. There was no plan to rescue all of those who would remain. All the people with no money, all the people with no wheels, all of those who couldn't hotwire one that they could steal. Thousands and thousands of people abandoned by the state, abandoned by their country, just left to meet their fate. New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. Drowned inside their attics, an army of the poor, an army of the destitute who couldn't get away. And the world will remember those sad and awful days when people shouted from their houses, dying on their roofs. When people came to find them, they were turned back by the troops. They died there with no water, they died there in the heat. They were shot down by the soldiers for trying to find some food to eat. New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. Now the city is in ruins, a massive toxic sea scattered through the nation. Half a million refugees, here we are, in the richest country on the earth, where the color of your skin determines what your life is worth. Where oil is the king, where global warming is ignored, where the very end of life is the place we're heading towards. Where it's more than just a metaphor, the flooding of the dike. And if we don't stop this madness, the whole world will be like New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is, Does Freedom of the Press Extend to State Secrets? The First Amendment should protect freedom of the press, but how do we reconcile the conflict between national security and accountability? Can we balance the need for secrecy with transparency?
So a major newspaper, say a major newspaper of record, gets a hold of some classified government material, say some leaked documents, some leaked government diplomatic cables, and prints those documents. Well, what has that newspaper done? Has it exercised its rights under the First Amendment, or has it betrayed the nation? And does the answer to that question depend on the consequences of publication? Let's argue that out. That's what we are here for. This is another debate from Intelligence Squared US. I'm John Donvan of ABC News. We are at the Skirball Center for the Performing Arts at New York University. And on this stage, we have two teams of debaters, two tables, two members each, arguing for the motion. Freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets. We have Gabriel Schoenfeld, who is author of Necessary Secrets, National Security, the Media, and the Rule of Law. And his partner, Michael Chertoff, former Secretary of Homeland Security and co-founder of the Chertoff Group. Arguing against the motion, Alan Dershowitz, the Felix Frankfurter Professor of Law at Harvard Law School, and David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for the New York Times. There will be winners and losers in this debate. It's a contest in which you, our live audience, act as the judges. By the time the debate has ended, you will have been asked to vote twice, once before and once after, and the team that has changed the most minds will be declared our winner. So on to round one, opening statements by each debater in turn. Our motion is freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets. And arguing for that motion, I'd like to introduce Gabriel Schoenfeld, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. And Gabriel, you are also a chess player, I understand, chess master at the U.S. Federation, Chess Federation.
That's right.
So you've come to play and to win.
Yes, and I can see far ahead as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gabriel Schoenfeld.
The gravity of the issue we're debating here tonight cannot be overstated. At stake is nothing less than preventing a reprise of the kinds of attacks that befell our city and our country nearly 10 years ago. To keep our country secure, our government inevitably generates a great many secrets of many different kinds. We cannot disclose all of the methods by which we track terrorists. We cannot publicize the vulnerabilities of our bridges and tunnels and buildings. But equally at stake is the character of our democracy. We live in an open society, and secrecy is antithetical to the democratic idea. Secrecy can be used as a cover for corruption and wrongdoing. And we depend upon a free press to keep us informed about what our government is doing in our name, including the things that it is doing in secret, or at least some of them. But even as we have a press that we want to be delving into state secrets, it must do so under the rule of law. The press must be vulnerable to prosecution when it violates the laws governing secrecy. The First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or the press. But of course, we live with numerous abridgments of free speech and free press, all widely accepted by the public and upheld by the courts. We can't libel one another. We can't engage in false advertising. And of course, it's forbidden to yell fire, falsely yell fire, in a crowded theater like this one. And as a statement of fact, ladies and gentlemen, the proposition under debate here tonight that freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets is inarguably true. Valid laws are on the books that criminalize the publication of certain state secrets. Now, does the existence of such laws mean that every time a journalist like my colleague here, David Sanger, publishes a state secret, he should be prosecuted and marched off to prison? Absolutely not. The real question raised by the proposition is whether the press can and should be prosecuted in those instances when it places the country in danger. Now, that such danger is not purely hypothetical. Today, we have WikiLeaks, which in the name of transparency has indiscriminately dumped thousands of secret diplomatic and military cables onto the internet. Now, some of those documents are innocuous, and many of them help us better understand what our government is doing around the world and what other governments are doing. But some of them are outright dangerous. One WikiLeaks document, a U.S. Army document, describes the technical details of the jamming devices used by our soldiers in Iraq to scramble the signals that insurgents were using to detonate roadside bombs. Now, I ask you, is there any reasonable person who believes it should be legal to publish the secret countermeasures used by our soldiers to keep from getting blown up on the battlefield? Is there any reasonable person who believes it should be legal to publish blueprints for making nuclear bombs? And if you in the audience agree with what Justice Robert Jackson once memorably said, that the Constitution of the United States is not a suicide pact, I urge you to vote for the proposition at issue here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Gabriel Schoenfeld. Our motion is freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets. And here to speak against this motion, Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law professor and consultant to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's legal defense team. Alan Dershowitz is, as we all know, a great attorney and a celebrity attorney who's been played at least twice in the movies. You were played in Reversal of Fortune by the late, great Ron Silver. And in American Tragedy, the O.J. Simpson trial, you were played by Richard Cox. But interesting, Ron Silver in that movie played Robert Shapiro. So was he upgrading the role? Or?
All I can tell you is Reversal of Fortune, having been produced by my son Elon Dershowitz, who's in the audience, is a much better film.
Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Dershowitz.
Thank you so much. We start with a story that one of my dissident clients told me in the 1970s when I was representing Soviet dissidents in the bad old days of the Soviet Union. The joke went around during Stalin's time that a dissident was arrested for the crime of calling Stalin a fool. And he came to court and he said, "I didn't commit a libel. I want to defend myself. I will prove that what I said is truthful." And they said, "You don't understand. You're not being charged with libel. You're being charged with revealing a state secret." And that's precisely the kind of state secret that we often seek to protect. Now, you don't have to be Stalin. Everybody knows, every newspaperman memorizes the famous quote of Thomas Jefferson. He said, "Were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter." That was pre-presidential Thomas Jefferson. Now, let me read you a quote. 6 years into his presidency, "A man who never looks into a newspaper is better informed than he who reads them, inasmuch as he who knows nothing is nearer the truth than he whose mind is filled with falsehoods and errors." Thomas Jefferson sought to censor the press. We all know that he opposed the Alien and Sedition Act. Of course he did, because that was federal legislation. But he supported state legislation that would have censored the press and protected him from embarrassment. And the issue is not whether secrets will be disclosed. If you read the New York Times, if you read Seymour Hersh, you understand the question is who decides which secrets are disclosed to whom, when? Should the government, the executive branch of the government, be making the decision as to which secrets to withhold and which to reveal? And the primary responsibility for keeping secrets lies with those who have those secrets. As Julian Assange, I think, aptly put it, the best way to keep a secret is not to know it. And if the government wants to keep secrets, they have to do a better job of preventing them from being leaked and not put the burden on the press. And by the way, I mean not only leaked WikiLeaks style, but leaked Bob Woodward, Seymour Hersh style, the kind of selective leaks that we've come to grow accustomed to. There are very limited numbers of secrets that deserve to be protected. And I believe, and here we have a real disagreement, you wrote in your book that you would prefer to leave this to the good judgment of prosecutors and the common sense of jurors. What I would prefer to see is a complete starting from scratch with the Espionage Law of 1917. Scrap it and draft a very narrow statute that says you cannot disclose the nature of certain kinds of weapons, you cannot disclose the movement of troops, you cannot disclose the names of spies. There must be a strong presumption in favor of freedom of speech and sunshine as the best disinfectant. The government says, trust us. No, don't trust the government. The New York Times says, trust us. Don't trust the New York Times. Trust the process of checks and balances. That process is the best guarantee of liberty. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan Dershowitz.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
The government wants to take over my health insurance.
Mine too.
I'm annoyed.
And I'm annoyed.
And we're
a pair annoyed.
Our eyes have seen the gory and the bloody healthcare fight.
And believe in every rumor is America's birthright. Is Obama just like Hitler?
Well, both of their moms were white.
Make sure Fox News is on.
Glory, glory, paranoia. Health reform, it will destroy ya. It's a big socialist ploy. The truth is so far gone. We'll descend on you. each town meeting. Call each congressman a putz. My name's Filbert.
Hazel.
I'm Pecan.
Pistachio.
We're nuts!
Soon health records will be on a chip
implanted in your butt that you'll be sitting on. Health reforms we will resist on. U.S. rankings we've dismissed on. 37th best health system we beat Azerbaijan.
Yeah, I think you're typing that on your TV remote control.
What channel is he on?
Illegal immigrants will get big bags of cash when they are sick.
In the House, Speaker Pelosi's trying every ploy and trick
to persuade those Blue Dog Democrats. She called in Michael Vick. Is this
healthcare swan song? Glory, glory, new death panels. This will go down in the annals of reasons we should change the channels when our TV is on.
And now back to, does freedom of the press extend to state secrets?
So here's where we are. We are halfway through the opening round of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, arguing for the motion that freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets. Merkel Chertoff, who's former Secretary of Homeland Security, co-founder of the Chertoff Group, and after a long career in government, lived with the secrets, knows what some of them are. So just between us, because it's us here, you're going to share some of it.
You're not going to hear any secrets from me.
Michael Chertoff.
Thank you very much. Now, nobody is arguing that the proposition means everything that the government has in its possession is a state secret. Nor are we arguing that simply having a single public official asserting that something is a state secret ends the analysis. But I think where the dispute has come down to is who actually makes the decision. Is it the government and the government process, or is it the press? Does the press get the final say? Now, I will agree with Professor Dershowitz that in the first instance, the right way to deal with this problem is for the government to control its own secrets. And most of the time, the government succeeds in doing so. But the reality is that there are times people do leak secrets. And sometimes they do it for what they may conceive to be noble motives. And sometimes they do it perhaps because they want to hurt the United States. And in those instances, it is not enough to say that because the government has failed to keep the secret ought to become public and ought to be published widely. And there, I believe the law allows, if the facts are there and the intent is there, a prosecution to take place as a way of deterring somebody from publishing that secret. And so I would argue that actually the existing system, which does require freedom of the press to give way to genuine state secrets, is pretty much the correct balance. And that's because the courts recognize that in the government process, a combination of executive action, congressional action, and judicial action is the best mechanism for balancing between state secrets and freedom of the press. Now, the press often argues we ought to be the judges. And the difficulty is that the press is sometimes a flawed judge of what is in the public interest. First of all, the press is not a monolith. If we say that state secrets have to give way to the press when the press gets hold of them, then we mean it has to be any member of the press, a blogger, a Hezbollah journalist, somebody who works for a news organ run by the government of a foreign country. And I don't think any of us believe that would be prudent or safe. The press is no more in a position to separate itself from its interest than anybody else. But unlike the organs of government, which are accountable to the public and to each other, the press is accountable to nobody. And that's why I strongly urge you to support the proposition that we're advocating tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael Chertoff.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. Stay with us. I'm John Donvan, and this is Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. Welcome back to the program.
Our motion is freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets, and now here to speak against the motion, David Sanger, who is chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times and was part of the team involved in its WikiLeaks coverage. So you've, David, printed some secrets in your time.
A few.
Well, I hope you're going to share those with us, since the other guy wouldn't. Ladies and gentlemen, David Sanger.
Thank you. I come to this as a practitioner, not as a legal expert. I come to this knowing that the tensions that we are discussing here today are, as you've heard, as old as the Republic. The New York Times, among other newspapers, had reporters embedded with Civil War troops, Union troops. And at one appropriate moment or another, several generals, having read the reviews of their strategy, took those reporters and put them in the brig. I've been around more than a few government officials who suggested to me over the years, as we have debated various stories that we were getting ready to write, that what was good for General Sheridan would be perfectly good today. I would argue it is impossible to separate out state secrets from what appears every day in the New York Times and other major newspapers around the world. It is impossible because you cannot discuss the subject of whether or not we should have gone into Iraq or how quickly we should get out of Afghanistan without daily venturing into territory that is classified somewhere and somehow. The problem is, as a reporter, I probably don't even know when much of that material is classified. And my friend Michael Chertoff points out that the press is a flawed judge of the national interest. That is absolutely true, but a better judge than the U.S. government, because when you read the U.S. government's own regulations for what gets made classified, the rules only discuss national security considerations. There is no category that makes the person who's got that stamp in the hand weigh a public interest. Only the press can do that, and only after the information is out. Now, there's a second issue around this, which is that only the executive, they said, really has the full knowledge to make those decisions. But in fact, I think what you heard in the discussion of the constitutional origins of all of this is that the founders believed that to give the executive complete discretion in this area is to create a country that isn't like the America that we know. You would get Egypt under Mubarak. You would get the Chinese press today. Now, we are hardly indifferent as reporters to the question of what the consequences of these actions are. We live in New York and Washington. We have reporters who are out all across the world. Many have been kidnapped. A couple, unfortunately, have been killed. We know that the violent jihadists who we write about each and every day have no interest in a free press, and we're not here to side with them. We are also not here to be propagandists for the U.S. government, and you don't want us to be. If you think briefly about some of the stories that we have held back on, we held back for a year on the story on warrantless wiretaps that President Bush authorized. Eventually, we published it. Congress decided to rewrite the law. And we've published stories that are quite controversial, including one earlier this year about Stuxnet, the computer virus that many believe the U.S. government had a role in developing that was used against the Iranian nuclear program. What possibly could be the interest in that? Very simple. If the U.S. government, if any other government, is starting off a cyber war, well, we are the country that is most vulnerable to that problem. So these are central policy issues. These secrets are not merely published because they are cool stories. They are published because there is a debate that the public has to conduct. Thank you.
Thank you, David Sanger. And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where our motion is freedom of the press does not extend to state secrets. We have heard from both sides, the side arguing for the motion, Gabriel Schoenfeld and Michael Chertoff, who are arguing that a press that can publish state secrets without fear of prosecution actually endangers the nation. The team arguing against, David Sanger and Alan Dershowitz, are arguing that, yes, there are secrets that should be kept, but it should not be up to the executive of the U.S. government alone to decide which of those secrets are worthy of keeping secret.
Coming up next, from the movie Gandhi. Gandhi tells British authorities to leave India.
Forgive me, gentlemen, but you must understand that His Majesty's government and the British people repudiate both the massacre and the philosophy that prompted it. Now, what I would like to do is to come to some compromise over the new
civil... Excuse me, Your Excellency. It is our view that matters have gone beyond legislation. We think it is time you recognized that you are masters in someone else's home. Despite the best intentions of the best of you, you must, in the nature of things, humiliate us to control us. General Dyer is but an extreme example of the principle. It is time you left.
With respect, Mr. Gandy, without British administration, this country would be reduced to chaos.
Mr. Kinnock, I beg you to accept that there is no people on earth who would not prefer their own bad government to the good government of an alien power.
But yes, sir, India is British. We're hardly an alien power.
Mr. Gandhi, even if His Majesty could waive all other considerations, he has a duty to the millions of his Muslim subjects who are a minority in this realm. And experience suggests that his troops and his administration are essential in order to secure the peace.
All nations contain religious minorities. Like other countries, ours will have its problems. But they will be ours, not yours.
How do you propose to make them yours? You don't think we're just going to walk out of India?
Yes. In the end, you will walk out. Because 100,000 Englishmen simply cannot control 350 million Indians if those Indians refuse to cooperate. And that is what we intend to achieve. Peaceful, non-violent, non-cooperation. Till you yourself see the wisdom of leaving, Your Excellency.
And now for something completely different.